I think I said this last week, but I know already you're going to be insufferable.
Oh my God, I've got, you know what I've got. I've got myself a Fresca. I've got one of my bestest friends in the whole wide world, my sister. I got a microphone and I got a movie. One of my favorite movies. This is top 10. This is top 10 movies for me.
I know.
We are ending Dinosaur Month correctly.
We are.
Absolutely. you know what? Land Before Time, that was you.
Mm-hmm.
This is my Land Before Time.
I get it.
This is my time before land. This is... Guys, you were not prepared to deal with me this recording.
Well,
you just are not. I will be crying. I will be laughing. I will be going through the whole range of meaning of life emotions for a human being within this one recording.
Well, then let's get to it.
I have one word for you.
What?
Underrated.
Okay.
Welcome back to Kicking and Streaming, where we got a head full of streams and a bad attitude. Let's go!
I'm Carrie.
I'm Ross.
And this week we are talking about the 2000 animated adventure film.
Masterpiece.
Alright.
Yeah.
We are talking about Disney's Dinosaur today.
Oh, wait, I forgot about the Disney.
Yes, you did.
Yuck. Anyway. Sometimes it takes Disney money to make something this good.
Before we get started, don't forget, go follow us on Twitter at Kick and Stream.
KICKNSTREAM.
You can write the show at kickingandstreamingpodcast@gmail.com.
That's with an and, not an ampersand.
And don't forget, folks, please be practicing those three R's this month. Rate, review, retweet.
Rate, review, retweet? I thought it was raw review, retweet.
Yes, that as well.
Yeah, guys, we want everyone to come and join the little paleontological watch party.
And
this
folks,
is paleontology, right? Like,
and folks, don't forget, go check out the Patreon.
Guys, for just $5 a month, you too can be a little onion contributor at our $5 level. You're getting access to all of our bonus content, all of our long form coverage, all of our television coverage. We covered all fucking three Lord of the Rings films.
Mm-hmm.
We covered every single goddamn episode of Netflix's The Haunting of Hill House and HBO's John Adams. It's all waiting over there for you right now. You sign up, you get access to like 2 years and some change worth of content.
And if you were a person who is eternally mad about how The Sopranos ended, you should go check out that new episode of our new segment, Hype Check.
Yeah, Hype Check. We've got more Hype Check in the future. Absolutely. But you know what doesn't need a Hype Check?
What?
Today's film selection.
Yeah.
Today's coverage. This week's coverage. Rawr.
I know this is what you've been waiting for all month, and I'm glad that we're here.
It is why I suggested doing Dinosaur Month.
Yeah.
And kind of glad we built up to it.
Walt Disney Pictures presents...
We have a visitor.
A story of friendship.
What is it?
I don't know.
Courage.
Elephant!
And loyalty.
What's the worst he can do?
Okay, what's the second worst thing?
Here's your girlfriend.
What you need is a little help from the love monkey.
Dinosaur, coming to video and Disney DVD 2001.
This movie,
mm-hmm.
It is one of the first films I can remember.
Yeah, because you were like four when it came out.
Mm-hmm. And this is where this all started for me. Guys, this is, it. There. You know, I understand it's going to be a me episode.
Here's the clicker.
No one would blame you. Yes, no, I'm going to be insufferable, as Carrie Ann said. But I remember, you know, we all had, if you're of our age or similar, you had the VHS, VCR experience as a child, right? And, you know, we had a lot of Disney films on VHS. And what I remember, we had the VHS for Tarzan. And... the Tarzan VHS, we popped it in, you know, there were a couple previews. But then right before Tarzan the movie got started, they played the first snippet from this film to serve as a trailer for this film.
Like the first 3 minutes or so.
Yeah, it was like the first like it was between 5 and 10 minutes. It was like a show before the show, you know?
Yeah.
It was, I think it was my favorite part of Tarzan, to be quite honest. Like, they play, you know, the Carnotaur attack and the, you know, egg traveling montage. They play the whole thing for you. And then at the end, dinosaur.
Yeah.
Coming this whatever. Because Tarzan was 98, and this is 2 years later, so timeline makes sense. And I just remember being my little 4 or 5 year old self, and I couldn't wait for that to happen. I just, from that little snippet, it really just jump-started and set my sense of wonderment aflame at that very tiny age. And while we had all of the other Disney stuff and whatever, because this is Disney.
Much to your chagrin.
But, like, I just remembered that this looked different.
It did.
This looked different from all previous Disney I'd seen before in my life. And that was exciting. It felt future, you know, it felt futuristic. It felt like, okay, all right, the millennium's here, says the four-year-old. But like, I was so, I remember I would pop that Tarzan VHS in just to watch the snippet from Dinosaur.
Mm-hmm.
And like, oh my God, guys, we've got a fantastic array of creators for you here today. I will be saying this several times. This film is vastly underrated.
It is.
In my opinion. It's directed by two people, which, I mean, you would almost have to, right? What a masterpiece. We've got Ralph Zonag and Eric Layton working together on this. I think you can gather that one's more of an animator and one's more of a live action person. Kind of how they did with Who Framed Roger Rabbit.
Yep.
Because that's the thing about this film. They take the Jurassic Park style renderings, put it to the 10th exponent, and then animate it into actual filming locations.
And you know what? You mentioned that a couple of episodes ago, and I'm like, wait, that's not right. What are you talking about? The environments are real. And then as this movie was getting along from the first few minutes, I was like, well, I'll be goddamned. He was right.
No, yeah, it's most of them are real.
Yeah.
And shot in the United States. Can you fucking believe that?
No!
So Ralph Zonag, our principal director here, he's been an animator on certain things such as Space Racers and Bolt. You know that movie about the dog?
Yeah.
And then Curious George, he animated parts of Rugrats Go Wild.
Yeah.
Which, what a crossover. Directing animator on, wait for it, All Dogs Go to Heaven, The Land Before Time.
No!
So he's actually been with us already once this week. Not, and we didn't even know it. An American Tale.
Ah!
He did Star Wars Droids and the Care Bears movie. I love that kind of, that's an eclectic array of animation. So, Ralph, you've got a lot. Carrie.
What?
He was a storyboard artist on Archer.
No!
Yeah!
You know how much I love Archer.
And I know you do. And I know you do. He directed one previous dinosaur subject before this called We're Back! A Dinosaur Story.
The one dinosaur movie we didn't cover this month.
From 1993. I mean, it got shut out by Jurassic Park. We understand, Ralph. It's okay. Three screenwriters, John Harrison, Robert Nelson Jacobs, and Waylon Green. Not getting too much into them, but just wanted to shout you out. Great story.
Mm-hmm.
I love that we made prehistoric creatures relatable to a 2000 audience.
Yeah, this was originally going to be more like a nature film.
It was
like,
going to be much darker.
It was going to be much darker. It was going to be much more National Geographic. But at the end, Michael Eisner, the CEO of Disney, said, let's make them talk.
Mm-hmm.
Like, that's what's going to make money if we make them talk.
A $222 million profit.
In 2000?
I know.
Are you kidding me?
Can you imagine? First conceived in 1986. Obviously, it went through a lot of alterations, as we just mentioned. But Walt Disney Feature Animation, you know how they like to pick things up. You know, they were like, hey, what if we just piggy dipped into the CGI a little bit with the Disney? And everybody was like, what? You don't want to draw this by hand? The fuck is wrong with you?
Yeah, Disney would not go on to abandon hand-drawn animations for quite a few years.
It was the fifth highest grossing film of 2000.
Mm.
I know.
You're going to be this way. And I just have to accept it.
It is one of the most successful home video sales of all time.
Yeah.
It's theatrical release was a little muted, but like they were putting the trailer onto all of the other Disney VHS releases. And so the kids were like, Mom, Dad, what the fuck? We need this. Can you get this? And they're like, sure, absolutely. Just be quiet.
Be quiet and sit and watch your VHS tapes.
It's the first film from Walt Disney Feature Animation to be 3D.
Mm-hmm.
Or in 3D.
I remember that as a kid. What you just said earlier, how this looks different.
Mm-hmm.
And that just sparked a little, you know, bulb in my brain as a child.
The cinematography, we will talk all about it as we go along here. David Hardberger and Douglas Smith, you did a beautiful job.
Mm-hmm.
And the editor, H. Lee Patterson, Sorry, Mr. Peterson. This is just... You're going to hear me talk about it. But Carrie Ann doesn't be here for 2 hours. So, folks, you might have guessed it, but we've got names. Voicing Aladar. A brave and compassionate Iguanodon.
Yeah.
We have D.B. Sweeney, Fire in the Sky, 1993. He's Shoeless Joe Jackson in Eight Men Out from 1988. And you know he's in Brother Bear.
Yeah.
Uh-huh.
He's Sitka.
Yeah, he is. Oh, guest starred on television series such as House.
Yep. He was one of House's former bandmates.
Criminal Minds, Crash, Castle. Not Castle.
Not with Nathan Fillion.
Voicing Pleo, the wise matriarchal lemur. Who raises Aladar?
Yeah.
We have Alfre Woodard.
I love Alfre Woodard.
I think she's been with us before, maybe?
I'm not sure. I mean, Beauty Shop. Do you remember Beauty Shop?
Okay, yeah.
She was the one always quoting Maya Angelou poems.
Absolutely. She did For Colored Girls, which is a Tyler Perry thing.
Mm-hmm.
She was in How to Make an American Quilt from 1995, Primal Fear
mm-hmm.
from 1996, Star Trek First Contact.
Mm-hmm.
She was in 12 Years a Slave, and yes, she was in the Lion King remake voicing Sarabi. She's Dr. Roxanne Turner from St. Elsewhere on NBC. An Emmy-nominated actress, Golden Globe-nominated actress. She's in the fucking MCU.
You gotta let that go.
God damn. And she's Betty Applewhite in ABC's Desperate Housewives. Voicing Yar, the stuffy patriarchal lemur, father of Pleo and Zinni.
Yes.
We have Ossie Davis. Ossie Davis, rarely talked about, but very active.
I love this vocal performance.
I know. He almost made it to EGOT, but didn't get there, you know? Like, huge in theater, huge in film. I say huge, but hardly anyone's ever heard his name before. Big on Broadway. He did Jeb, which is from 1946. It's a World War II drama.
Okay.
And you're right. This voice performance is very good. He directed something called Cotton Comes to Harlem from 1970.
Okay.
Wonder what that's about. Aw, Dr. Doolittle. He's in Dr. Doolittle.
Like the Eddie Murphy Dr. Uh-huh. Doolittle?
And he's in Grumpy Old Men.
Oh! I don't know. I've seen Grumpy Old Men, but couldn't pick him out.
Bitch, he's in the L Word. I fucking love that. He also did the NBC miniseries King from 1978, which is about Martin Luther King.
Okay.
He was MLK Sr., not Jr.
Gotcha.
Mm-hmm. Voicing Zinni, who is Pleo's brother and Yar's son, we have Max Casella.
I had to look this guy up because he's got a Buddy Hackett quality to him,
uh-huh.
which is a very antiquated reference, but I found out through my research that he was on The Sopranos.
He was in a very key role there at the end, yeah.
Which we talked about on Patreon this month.
He was in Newsies, Ed Wood, Little Mermaid 2, Return to the Sea.
Wait! Yes, I remember that!
He's in Leatherheads. He's in Revolutionary Road. I think that's funny. The thing that I know Max Casella from most,
mm-hmm.
he was in the original Broadway cast of The Lion King.
Oh, shit.
And he performed as Timon.
He's Timon.
On the recording and everything.
Oh, my God. Imagine a Broadway guy being in The Sopranos.
Also, Boardwalk Empire.
Yeah.
And Doogie Howser, M.D. But, love you, Max. Hayden Panettiere is voicing Suri.
Mm-hmm.
I don't think we've had her.
No, because we haven't done Remember the Titans.
Yes, we love Remember the Titans.
You know...
Ally McBeal, Raising Helen, Heroes. That's her big thing, because she's Claire Bennett from Heroes. She's also Juliet Barnes from Nashville.
Law & Order SVU.
Yeah.
She has one guest spot on Law & Order SVU.
She's also the voice of Kyrie and Zion in Kingdom Hearts.
Yeah. Oh, some of you gamer babes will know that.
Absolutely. Voicing Crone, we have Samuel E. Wright. Samuel E. Wright is the voice of Sebastian in The Little Mermaid.
What?
He is also from the original Broadway cast of The Lion King as Mufasa.
Ross.
He's a Disney whore.
You are fucking kidding me right now.
Sammy Wright is an official Disney legend.
Oh, okay. I'm sorry. I didn't understand that we were in the presence of a legend.
He has an Oscar for singing Under the Sea.
Under the Sea.
Under the Sea.
Under the Sea.
Under the Sea. It's a great vocal performance, by the way. Voicing Neera, Crone's sister, and Aladar's little, hey.
Girlfriend.
Another, but they're both iguanodons, too. We've got Juliana Margulies. Don't know a lot about her. I know that she's Carol Hathaway from ER for like 15 years.
Yeah.
So, Carrie, she was on The Sopranos.
She was not.
Yeah. The chick that relapses with Chris.
Oh, no.
Yeah.
Oh, no.
Yeah.
Oh, my goodness.
Mm-hmm.
Okay.
Wow. I did not expect all the Sopranos to be coming out of the woodwork here in Dinosaur. We've got Peter Siragusa voicing Bruton. He's not hyperlinked. voicing Baleen, an elderly, friendly Brachiosaurus. We have Dame Joan Plowright. Please welcome her back to Kicking and Streaming. She's been with us before. She was with us when we covered The Last Action Hero.
She's the English teacher.
Yeah.
And was married to Laurence Olivier.
She was on the Sir Laurence Olivier show for 28 years. Holy shit. We talked about her, too, when we talked about My Week with Marilyn, because she was married to Olivier for so long. Voicing Ema, a also elderly and friendly Styracosaurus.
That was good.
Yeah. She looks like a Triceratops, but she's not. Is Della Reese. Della Reese, she's a jazz and gospel recording artist.
Ooh.
Do you know that song from 1959 called Don't You Know? She's Red Fox in Harlem Nights. She was with Martin Lawrence in A Thin Line Between Love and Hate and Expecting Mary. Ooh, Touched by an Angel.
I remember people talking about Touched by an Angel when I was a kid, yeah.
But she gives probably the best voice performance
in
this whole thing.
She has all the best lines! I swear to God!
Folks, you know how I feel. You know how I feel about a film score.
I knew this was going to be the last thing we talked about.
This is what set me aflame.
Mm-hmm.
James Newton Howard. Remember those three words for the rest of your life. James Newton Howard. He's a genius. He's my favorite film composer. I went on at nauseam about him in every other James Newton Howard composed film we've ever done.
The Lady in the Water.
The Village, which is my favorite film score. There are others.
Yeah.
But I don't have time.
Yeah, we don't have time.
And James Newton Howard's masterpiece of a film score that this is absolutely what set me up for wonderment.
Mm-hmm.
I love this music. And editing note for Carrie.
Yeah.
I will direct you to the certain pieces that I want you to use.
I know you will.
And if you want, I will get them for you without you having to cut them out of the movie.
No, it's fine.
Just so you can put them under me talking.
I can do it. It's fine.
Okay.
You're so worried about those.
I'll still give you the song titles when we get to those points.
I know you will.
James Newton Howard, get in bed right now.
Stop.
Sorry.
Absolutely knock it off.
I would love to meet him before he goes. I really would. All right, Carrie.
Mm-hmm.
Are you ready? Because I'm fucking ready.
I know. You're wired. You are wired for sound, literally.
I'll be fast. I'll let you talk too. Dwink. I'll let you talk too. I promise. That beginning music unlocks a part of me that has fueled my wonder since I came into cognitive consciousness.
I know, I get it.
Inner Sanctum is the title of the tune. It's the view from inside the dinosaur egg of all the shadows of all the other dinosaurs. I'm just like, fuck yes.
No, I wrote, starting out inside the egg is pretty trippy. And it's also apropos that you are also just becoming, you know, cognizant as a child.
As a little four-year-old, yeah.
It's not a mystery to me why this is so core for you.
We have some little voiceover from Pleo, who we will meet later.
Some things start out big, and some things start out small. Very small. But sometimes the smallest thing can make the biggest changes of all.
We see Mom, Mother Iguanodon.
Mother Iguanodon.
Tending to her unhatched eggs in her little ground nest she's made for them, right?
There's like eight or so eggs in this nest.
They're real.
Yeah, I know. That's the fucking
thing. Can you fucking believe they're real? And her little, her arm adjusting them is just like a green stick that they've animated over.
Yeah, that's incredible.
It looks so natural.
It does. It's why when you said these backgrounds are real, I said, bullshit. No, they're not. But then when I was watching it, I was like, he was fucking right. This shit that is not the dinosaurs is practical.
I know.
That's incredible to me.
Did you notice anything about the kid dinosaur that's snooping in the nest?
Oh, that's a ducky.
It's a Saurophilus.
Yes, it is. That's a ducky. Yep, yep, yep.
She waves that baby ducky away, and it's prancing through the landscape, bothering every other mother trying to tend to her eggs, and it's chasing this flying lizard? I don't know what the little creature is, but
I wrote a bug.
Yeah, it's chasing a lizard bug, and it chases it into the tree line, right? And mm-hmm. we're in the forest, and it's looking up at it up on a branch, and as it flies away, we get some drippings.
The saliva.
Saliva is dripping down onto the branch in front of it.
Because the branch is not a branch.
Okay. The mouth shot of the Carnotaurus is legitimately so terrifying. The Carnotaur attack, it was traumatizing, but I lived for it again and again and again.
This is where I had to learn late in life that Carnotaur was not
a Tyrannosaurus Rex.
Yeah, like, I always thought that's just what they're calling it because it's a carnivore. No, a Carnotaur was an actual subspecies of dinosaur. And it is, if you can imagine, far more terrifying than a T-Rex.
When Ducky is running away and then it bursts through the trees.
Oh my God!
That creature is so beautiful and terrifying to behold.
I know.
And the sounds that it makes.
You have goose flesh?
I have goose flesh. Like,
do you remember the McDonald's toys?
Yes!
The hand puppets?
Absolutely!
And we both had Carnotaur
yes!
hand puppets?
Yes! Because you were the big Carnotaur and I was the smaller one.
Yeah.
And, which there are two later in the film. And the Carnotaur actually steps on the Mother Iguanodon's nest.
It smashes all but one of her eggs.
The crunch of that poor Pachyrhinosaurus as the Carnotaur tackles it to the ground.
Yeah.
Like, oh my God. And then with it eating the dinosaur in the background, in the foreground, we see the lone little egg, right?
Mm-hmm.
And this little creature,
the Oviraptor.
The Oviraptor. I think it's funny. The little noises it's making. This is us in the morning.
I hate that creepy little thing.
Two Oviraptors end up fighting over the egg, and this sets in motion the egg travels montage. The egg travels montage is the most emotional part of the film for me.
Yeah.
It shows an array of prehistoric life that was just out there. It's like the baby Moses being set into the Nile.
Yes!
The egg is almost crushed several times as it flows through the waterways that the Oviraptors have dropped it into before it gets scooped up by a pterodactyl.
And I know what you're about to talk about, because this is one of the best moments of the score, because that pterodactyl picks that egg up and it starts taking off with it. And there is a moment where we go over a horizon, a cliff, whatever. And I remember this part of the score, because when this trailer played on the Tarzan tape, or when we were watching the actual tape, I would position myself on the end of the couch, on the arm, and hold my arms out like I was flying across this great expanse that the pterodactyl is about to fly over. Break into the pterodactyl soaring over this plateau filled with dinosaur species of all kinds. I cry every time, or tear up at least a little. It is so important to me, and was important to me then, to know that there was once another system of life that ruled the planet.
Yeah.
And that we have come so far that we can find the evidence of it and recreate it. This pterodactyl carries this egg across the sea. And before it can feed it to its very hungry babies in the nest, it drops it into the middle of the jungle, right into the midst of a lemur colony. Yeah, we're on an island now. This island is not that far off the coast of the mainland, wherever that might be.
So this is like... Let's talk about lemurs for just one second.
Okay.
Lemurs have been around the whole time. Which makes little to no fucking sense to me.
Well, Darwin, evolution.
Lemurs are some of the most ancient mammals out there.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm like, what do they know? They obviously raise with love.
Yeah.
But, you know, this is where we come to be. We meet Yar and Pleo, and then Pleo's brother Zinni. And we are going to witness this egg hatch. They're creeping up to it. They're all freaked the fuck out.
Well, what is it?
It was an egg. Look. What?
It's a cold-blooded monster from across the sea. Vicious. Flesh-eating. Ugh.
Looks like a baby to me.
Babies grow up.
You keep that thing. One day we'll turn our backs. It'll be picking us out of its teeth.
Yar is wigged.
Yeah, he's immediately icked. He's like, no, I don't know that there are any other dinosaurs of any kind on this island.
There aren't.
I would imagine not, but like they've never seen anything like this before. And Yar is like, that is a baby, but babies grow up. Pleo wants to keep him, but Yar keeps insisting it's too dangerous. So
what do we do? Get rid of it, says Yar.
She says, here, you get rid of it.
The baby is so cute and innocent. Yar is going to drop this baby dinosaur to its death from the tree.
He's holding it in his hands over his head.
He can't seem to muster the energy.
Because it's cute.
And up until this point, the baby doesn't seem to be very aware.
Mm-hmm.
But remember, we learned in Jurassic Park about imprinting.
Mm-hmm.
When they're born into the, you know, like when the first living creature they come into contact with, and technically that's Pleo, but his eyes aren't really open, right?
Mm-hmm.
But when Yar is staring at this thing, trying to muster the energy to drop it to its death, it's when he opens his eyes all the way and grabs a hold of Yar's thumb. That's imprinting.
Yes, it is.
And Yar is charmed as fuck by it. And then he yawns and Yar rolls his eyes and the baby pisses all down the front of Yar. Yep.
Yeah, so we're keeping him and we're naming him Aladar.
It'll be okay. We'll teach him to hate meat.
This monster's got no teeth. What's he gonna do? Gum us to death?
Zinni, come on. Look at that sweet little face. Does that look like a monster to you?
Cut to shenanigans years later. We're playing chase. Aladar, now grown up, is chasing these young lemurs through the jungle, and It's the way he slurps his quarry like spaghetti after he traps Suri in his mouth. And yeah, this is Aladar, the very same baby Iguanodon raised in a lemur colony.
Yeah, no, he is their baby. Like,
insane, I know, but super cute and full of good family values. Like, he's one of their own. And this is where I did write, thank God Iguanodons are herbivores. Like,
and, like, Pleo's had a daughter by this point. Her name is Suri.
Yes, this is Suri, who had to work her way out of Aladar's mouth. And, you know, the lemur colony is preparing for their annual courtship ceremony.
The mating ritual.
This is where everyone mates up. And lemurs do this, just not so specifically as portrayed here. And, you know, Pleo, mom,
yeah,
tells Aladar to go and find Zinni, who is on the beach rehearsing his pickup lines for the courtship ceremony. And they're bad.
Girls, I'm known as the Professor of Love. And school's in session. Yeah, I still got it.
I hope it's not contagious.
I'm a raging epidemic of romance.
Come on, hot stuff. Let's get going.
It is instant gratification at his, like, own wit, and I know exactly what kind of guy Zinni is. And when he goes, yep, I still got it. And Aladar goes, well, I hope it's not contagious. Whatever it is.
It's so funny because Zinni's technically his uncle.
Technically.
And like,
Monkey's uncle.
And I'm so sorry. Throughout my entire life, I thought Zinni was just a weird family friend. And it's because Zinni doesn't look like the rest of the family.
Yeah, he looks a little different.
He doesn't look like Yar.
I think I know what mom looks like.
Yeah.
I think I know what Yar's mate used to look like.
He must look like mom because Pleo looks like dad.
And I love it when Pleo and Yar are giving the respective pep talks before the courtship ceremony to the men and the women.
Yeah, like Pleo's giving the pep talk to the girls and Yara's giving the pep talk to the boys.
And men and women are so clueless about each other, and I love that we are reflecting this in a prehistoric colony of lemurs that is so relatable to a 2000s audience.
Okay, boys, gather around. Listen and learn from the master.
Now, girls, don't jump into the trees after the first boy with a cute backflip. It's more fun if you keep them guessing.
And if a cute backflip doesn't work, guess.
You're never going to forget this day, so make it one to remember.
But if you mess up, don't worry. They'll never remember.
But this is putting us right in their situation, right? That life is happening here. This is a community.
Mm-hmm. The mating ritual takes place in this beautiful tree on this seaside cliff, right?
I wrote, so all the lemurs hop into the tree and they're all getting horny, I guess. And like,
like, and then the poor Zinni.
The howling.
Yeah.
And Aladar's bellow, like, with all them, you know, they're choosing each other, giving each other little flowers, and this is how they made up, you know? Like,
Zinni's falling a little bit behind because he's too busy showing off, and he gets, like, stuck in the tree.
And again, the music.
I know.
It is Lion King tier good.
It is!
And James, get in bed. Anyway, I'd like to do a mating ritual with James Newton Howard.
Stop!
Just saying!
Missing all the action. Well, come on.
Hey, haven't you heard? I am the action.
When all the couples are watching the sunset from the treetop and the shot of poor Vinny just hanging by himself on the tree vine.
Yeah, he got a little bit too behind and there were no females left over by the time he got in the tree.
And you know, Pleo feels bad for her brother, but she also kind of feels bad that Aladar doesn't have a match, you know?
Yeah, like, he's the only dinosaur on this island and nobody looks like him. And that is so, I mean, I know he's got his little furry family. But that's so isolating. I'm the only one who looks like me.
Mm-hmm.
And I have no one and may never have anyone.
Oh, we gotta talk about it. The meteor shower montage is traumatizing.
Yeah, you were a little boy when this happened for you the first time. I was like 10. I was like 8.
This very big meteor shower begins in the sky. It's beautiful to begin with, but just, sorry. What are they?
Yeah.
I don't know.
I don't know what those are, because why would they?
The vibe changes so quickly, and you can just tell the air is thinning, and something is wrong.
Yar immediately knows something's up, because he probably smells fire.
When at last, you see it.
Oh, I got goose pimples watching that meteor come down, that ginormous rock.
A colossal meteor that is 10 miles wide is tearing its way down through the atmosphere. It comes all the way down, and they watch it go all the way down, and it lands far out in the ocean. The ensuing blast begins tearing away toward them on the shore.
Oh, it's so terrifying.
It clears their whole home.
Yeah.
And debris is raining down all around them, and one hell of an instant tsunami following. This places them close to the Yucatan region in Mexico.
Oh, really?
Mm-hmm. Where the supposed meteor struck. This also places us at the end of the Cretaceous period. The lemurs latch onto Aladar, and he is pushed all the way to the other side of the island, where he's forced to dive into the ocean.
Yeah, it's just him, Yar, Pleo, Suri, and Zinni. That's it. They go headfirst into the ocean.
Pleo! Yar! Where are you?
Aladar manages to swim to the mainland, somehow, with all of them on his back.
And miraculously, they all make it.
Yeah.
Carrie.
I know. I hate this part. This is where I cried.
The shots back at their burning island.
It's just a smoldering heap on the horizon.
And the howling.
Oh no, Suri wants to know if anybody's left over there, and she goes up and she cries out to see if anyone will answer her.
It's so sad.
Oh, sorry. Easy, easy.
Oh, this film is so gorgeous and deep in so many ways.
Yeah.
Like, we go through so many stages of harrowing life events. I just... they did this right, is my point.
Yeah.
When in doubt, follow the winged creatures, I guess.
Yeah, no, Aladar decides to follow the birds, and that turns out to be a very good decision. He puts everybody on his back, and they walk for a long time looking for food. There is nothing green out here.
The desolation shots are fantastic.
Yeah, they are.
The earth has become a wasteland
mm-hmm.
around them, and the sun is hardly visible anymore due to the fallout of the impact.
Yeah.
The family encounters a pack of velociraptors.
Remember Jurassic Park?
Yeah, no, I like...
It's a lot of velociraptors.
We know these fuckers. We've been new. They might very well be the ancestors of her.
Yeah. Her.
Who's her? Clever girl. We should call her Clever Girl. And of course a chase ensues because these bitches are hungry. That one raptor sinks all four of its claws into Aladar's side and is riding him like a passenger. The music, I swear to God.
Aladar! Ribbon!
I can't reach!
And they chase Aladar into a dust storm, inside of which there is a whole herd composed of creatures who look like Aladar that he has never seen before.
No, it's a multi-species herd. They run headlong into this herd. And guys, there are so many dinosaurs in this herd, not just iguanodons. We've got all shapes and sizes here today.
This is the Cretaceous equivalent of a culture shock for Aladar. Like,
when the Brachiosaur steps over him, he's never seen a creature that big before.
He keeps getting knocked down because he's literally right in their path, and the lemurs are losing their minds. And then the bellow of the largest creature to ever walk the earth in all history, a Brachiosaurus, it completely walks over them.
I know.
Look at all the Aladars.
Yeah, notably, there's many iguanodons in this herd, including their leader, Crone.
The herd seems to be led by three iguanodons, Crone, Bruton, and Crone's sister, Neera.
Is Bruton not their brother?
No.
Oh, he's not?
No, he's not.
Okay. Like, you know, Crone is the leader, Bruton is his lieutenant, and then Neera, his sister, is like, I don't know, den mother to all the motherless iguanodons and dinosaurs in the herd.
Crone announces that they're making camp for the night, and this is where Aladar begins to become acquainted with the slowpokes, as I will be referring to them.
The way, okay, hold on. We've got three slowpokes here at the rear of the herd, and like, it's when that first one comes out of the dust. This is Ema, the Styracosaurus.
Uh-huh.
She has obviously this older black woman vibe to her where she's like,
walking backwards, huh? Well, let me know if that gets you there any faster. Keep those little legs moving, Earl, or you'll get left behind.
And then we've got Baleen. She's the Brachiosaurus.
Yeah, she's the last of her kind.
I know.
Isn't that sad?
And then we've got little Earl. He is an Ankylosaurus.
This is where I wrote, why are we utilizing the Pluto principle?
Why is Earl Ema's pet?
Yeah, like, you remember Pluto the dog from Disney?
Why is Pluto a pet and Goofy isn't?
Yeah.
They're both dogs.
And both Earl and other dinosaurs are dinosaurs. Why is Earl the only one who's like a dog?
No, Ema. I wish we were at your nesting grounds now. All this pushing and shoving about just for a place to sleep. I'm not used to this kind of behavior.
Baleen, you got big feet. Just give them a kick.
Oh, I couldn't possibly.
Aladar introduces himself and his lemur family to these three slowpokes, and they ask about the nesting grounds that the herd is heading towards. Like, again, we're in the middle of desolation. There's no way any life is actually subsisting out here.
Very similar to Land Before Time. They were on their way to the Great Valley.
Yeah.
The last green space in the middle of the Cretaceous extinction event, you know?
And following the meteor, like you said in the Land Before Time episode, we're all heading in that direction, the last verdant patch on this cursed rock.
Ema says the hard job is just getting there. We're going to be chilling when we do, though. And the slowpokes explain to Aladar that Crone is a super harsh taskmaster because they are very old and they are worried that the herd is moving so fast, they are going to get left behind and succumb to the elements and die. And Aladar tries to give Crone the old timer's concerns.
Oh my God.
And the ageism, I swear to God.
Well, I was back here talking to these guys. I guess they're having a hard time keeping up. So, you know, maybe you could slow it down a bit.
Let the weak set the pace. Now there's an idea. Better let me do the thinking from now on, Aladar.
Hey, they need help back here.
Watch yourself, boy.
Ema says, you keep your head down and you mind what Crone tells you. And you just consider yourself lucky that the Velociraptors is all that's following us.
The next morning, Crone and Bruton gather the herd to explain the rules of the crossing. And apparently, this is not the first time this has happened. Meteor or not, there is a desert out here.
Mm-hmm.
And they regularly cross this desert in order to get to the nesting grounds. And it's the way that Bruton is like, listen! We're going across this. There's no water. And it's going to be very hot. And if you're slow, you're going to get left behind.
In situations like this, leadership is important. In situations like this, listen to me. Leadership is important, but it's how you lead that makes all the difference.
It really is. And Krohn and Bruton are, I wouldn't pick that. I didn't vote for him.
The across the desert montage is also God tier. A long, hard walk under a torrential sun piercing down on you through an already poisoned atmosphere and a completely dehydrated environment.
Can you feel the heat on the back of your neck?
The long shots in this are art that I need on the walls in my home. The shot of the herd crossing over the dune.
Oh, I know what you want me to play right here.
At sunset, that is a painting, and I need that. The dune is real.
I know!
Like, I can't...
Isn't that sick?
On your feet, Ima. Can't let those things eat you. They're out there waiting.
The raptors, meanwhile, are feasting on a carcass when we discover that two Carnotaurs are following their tracks.
His and her Carnotaurs.
They might be a couple. Who knows? They might just be looking They might just be, they just might be a loving couple in the middle of the apocalypse looking for a sensible meal.
And how could we really blame them? That's the thing. It's these types of movies where we're just dealing with the circle of life and it's very hard to find an actual antagonist. Of course they're hunting them. That's what they're supposed to do.
He doesn't want to be fed. He wants to hunt.
Exactly. Finally, we've come to a hill, and Krohn signals that they've arrived at the lake that is supposed to be there. Again, they've made this crossing many times. They know this is where to stop and sleep and rehydrate.
They are so excited. Finally, water. But, like, not. Because the valley is dry, and everyone is shocked.
The meteor has dried all this shit up. The lake is gone. Goodbye!
Krohn sends Bruton and a scout to check the perimeter, but just to make sure. And Krohn says that, you know, the nesting grounds are only a few days away. We should just keep moving.
And Neera!
Krohn, we've never gone this long without water. If we keep going like this, we'll lose half the herd.
Then we save the half that deserves to live.
Ugh! How Billy Zane and Titanic of you.
Oh my God.
Not the better half.
Oh! No, that's disgusting.
It is. And like, Neera does not care for that at all.
I'll come back to this point later, but the fact of the matter is, looking at it from an animalistic standpoint, that really is the way to be. But the problem is that these dinosaurs have sentience and therefore can reason shit out as human beings would. And Neera knows that's not right.
While everyone else starts to move on, Ima has wandered down into the dried up lake and is like, why the fuck isn't there water here? There was always water here before.
She's despairing.
This is a woman losing it, having heat stroke. She's in pain. She doesn't understand why her world and almost everybody she has ever loved has disappeared.
And it's so sad because Aladar's like,
we gotta get up. It was water everywhere.
There is no water, dear.
As Baleen is approaching, her colossal footfall is rupturing the surface of the ground, right?
Uh-huh.
And Aladar and Zinni can hear water moving underneath the ground.
Yeah, so they dig a little hole, and then they tell Baleen to put her foot in the hole.
Now press down.
Woo-hoo! I always did like big girls.
Water.
Oh, my goodness.
Water! Come on!
He found water.
Yeah.
Krohn comes over to inspect and roars them away from the puddle they've made.
Oh no, it's like Black Friday on that little puddle.
The herd panics.
Yeah, they rush right over to that puddle, and Krohn is you know, swinging his big balls around.
Big alpha, yeah.
Trying to get everybody away from that water. He's thirsty. He needs water right now. Not the rest of the herd he's leading.
It's like Donald Trump and Diet Coke. No one else can have any Diet Coke.
Okay.
And I'm just glad the Slowpokes got at least a little bit of a drink before the herd descends. And this is terrifying to me because this will happen to humanity in my lifetime.
Yeah. Oh, God.
Over resources.
No!
And it... If not when I'm, you know, a greater adult, but when I'm probably very old.
Yeah, maybe you're the Ema.
Oh, no.
Maybe you're the Ema at the end of all of it. She's just trying to sip, and all those other dinosaurs are clamoring and pushing her down. And I love Nira. Nira's, like, up on a rock watching all this happen, and Aladar's like, yeah, keep shoving and pushing. That's very helpful. And then she sees her brother acting like a fucking animal.
Mm-hmm.
Which, of course, he is. But that's my point. These dinosaurs have sentience.
Suri is making friends with two little iguanodons not too long after, and Aladar gets them some water, coaxes them out of their little cave because they're scared. They don't have their parents anymore. They're by themselves. And I love that the whole time, Aladar is the voice of reason, just the whole time, saying, we can help each other, and can we please help each other and survive, please? Can we all care? Like a modicum? Like, can we all protect each other, you know? Nira and Aladar kind of get to talking a little bit.
Yeah, because she's predictably endeared by his care for the children.
Nira says, hey, why are you helping the old ones?
Yeah.
And Aladar's like, what am I, a fucking monster? Of course I'm helping them. What, do you think I should just leave them behind? And Nira's literally just like, huh, wow.
Why did you help that old one?
What else could we do? Leave her behind? Oh, you mean you actually...
Well, that happens all the time. You don't survive if you're not...
strong enough.
Well, yeah.
Is that you talking? Or your brother?
This is an interesting conversation to me. Because of the way the dinosaurs either died out as a result of this cataclysmic event, or they evolved. Those are the two options that are based in science. And it really only becomes a philosophical conversation when you bring sentience into it. The fact that these dinosaurs have consciousness, because if they have consciousness, then it also becomes a question of ethics. Treating each other with dignity and respect and looking out for one another instead of just leaving it to the food chain.
It's almost like my 4-year-old brain was conditioned to experience humanity through the sentience of computer animated dinosaurs.
As well as many other things, like toys,
yes,
and cars, and bugs.
Absolutely. So Nira and Aladar go out for drinks.
No, they do not.
And Krohn hates this, but that's when Bruton, who went out with the scout to check the perimeter, shows up to warn that there are literal Carnotaurs behind them.
You led them right to us. Maybe you can feed them with your hide. Move the herd out. Double time!
Krohn says, we're leaving now.
Yeah, Krohn starts moving the herd, and Aladar says, you know, the ones in the back, they'll never make it.
They'll slow down the Carnotaurs. Aladar says, you can't sacrifice them like this. And Krohn gets physical.
Hold it! That could be you back there! Or you!
If you ever interfere again, I'll kill you.
Also, I don't understand why they don't just move by night. I feel like it would be a lot less strenuous.
Well,
their eyesight might not be so good at night, but these are, I don't know, advanced lizards.
They don't know a lot about the advanced lizards because they're not spending time studying them. They're getting the fuck away. And that's why I love Ema.
Let's go, Carnotaurs.
What?
Carnotaur. A mouthful of teeth with a bad attitude. Let's go.
Come on, you guys, get on. We're gonna get left behind.
The herd leaves Aladar, the lemurs, Baleen, Ema, and Earl in the dust.
Yeah, they're gone. And as they go throughout their journey throughout the night, they happen upon an injured Bruton.
And this is where I have questions, because...
I don't know how it works chronologically, because I don't know if the Carnotaur fucked him up, or did he also get Malvi, and did Krohn fuck him up?
Yeah, that's the thing, because that scout got pulled off and killed by one of those Carnotaurs.
Yeah.
And maybe another Carnotaur got a couple of bites in on him, but he looked fine when he came to tell Krohn about the contours, but then when we magically meet him in the middle of the night, he's woefully injured, and I can't figure out if the Carnotaur did it or if Krohn did it.
What happened?
Carnotaurs. Oh, we should keep moving.
We can't just leave him here.
We can if we move fast enough.
Hey, you don't look so good. Let me help you.
Save your pity. I just need some rest. Now get away from me.
Suit yourself.
And you know, he's being a big baby and he won't accept help from them. And so they find a nice big cave to take shelter in because now the rain's coming down very hard.
And Aladar's like, if you change your mind, we'll be in that cave system, you big baby.
And of course, Bruton does eventually wander in and is finally accepting. Fucking dumb men. When Bruton is like, what is it with you? To Aladar. Like, he has no reference for compassion.
Or empathy.
At all.
Because he's been driven by Krohn so long.
This is every one of the dinosaurs' main refrain to Aladar. Why are you compassionate?
Why are you trying so hard?
He's like, I was raised by lemurs.
I was raised by lesbians.
You coming in? Or what?
What is it with you?
At least I know enough to get in out of the rain. Now come on, on your feet.
This is a story of living creatures moving past their nature to survive.
Mm-hmm.
And that is why it is so important to me. And it is one of the first films that set that sense in my head.
Mm-hmm.
And it is just, again, beautifully done. So Pleo is tending to Bruton's wounds in the cave, and Bruton asks Pleo, why is he, Aladar, doing this, pushing them on with false hope?
It's hope that's gotten us this far.
But why doesn't he let them accept their fate? I've accepted mine.
And what is your fate?
To die here. It's the way things are.
Only if you give up, Bruton. It's your choice, not your fate.
Pleo!
I know. Oh, she is the best mom.
Because everybody wants to give up, right? Like,
and nobody wants to fuck with Bruton except Pleo. Like, Pleo sees that in him, that hurt, that lack of hope, and she wants to nurture him in a way that he probably never has been nurtured before.
And it's like Land Before Time when they're all snuggled up together in the corner and Bruton's just being Sarah over here all alone. So the Carnotaurs are like, that cave smells delicious.
I want to know how this happened in the rain, okay?
They can probably smell Bruton's wounds.
Maybe, but rain water is supposed to dampen things like that.
And, you know, yeah, dampen the smell, you should say, yeah.
Yeah, not to mention the fact that all of their tracks have probably been washed out by the rain. But the Carnotaurs have found the cave. They can smell something, but they can't see a lot. And this is what brings me back to what I said in Jurassic Park. Back then, it was believed that the visual acuity of T-Rexes, Carnotaurs, were based on movement. And now I'm starting to believe that maybe that wasn't necessarily the case.
I thought it was disproven.
How
could it be disproven, though? We have no way of knowing.
Like, yeah, but what I'm thinking is that it's just that their night vision is not great.
Probably, because what is that term? When your eyes are on opposite sides of your head.
Oh, I don't know what you're talking
like
about.
Like a horse. Like a horse's eyes are on, the right eye's on one side of its head and the left eye's on the other side.
Uh-huh.
Our eyes are right next to each other at the front of our heads.
Yeah.
So, but Carnotaurs, like horses, have their eyes on either side of their head.
Maybe
that makes it tough. Why do you think they blind horses all the time?
Yeah.
You know, like.
Exactly.
They all try to squeeze into the back of that cave, but poor Baleen's big ass is complicating that. And the smaller Carnotaur, which, by the way, if this is a couple,
uh-huh,
the smaller one is the male and the larger one is the female.
Oh, you think that's the case?
In most cases, when it comes to the Tyrannosaurus, in the Tyrannosaurus species, the females are always bigger.
Ooh.
And the males are always smaller.
Short King energy!
Short King energy!
Move it, Ima!
you know, the smaller Carnotaur, gets a hold of Aladar and is like dragging him away, and Bruton saves him and the rest of them by distracting the Carnotaurs. And the Carnotaurs are like, why won't you stay down? Didn't we beat you up last night? And like, the cave is beginning to collapse.
I'll hold them all! You help the others!
And the collapse, guys, it kills Bruton, but also the smaller Carnotaur.
Oh, the male got killed, huh?
But you know who emerges from that? The big female Carnotaur. She's like, you killed my husband. It's the way the Carnotaur is stomping away, like, I'll remember this.
Big Bridget. Like Big Bertha in
Big,
Jurassic
Bertha
Park.
Bertha and Bridget cousins.
Big Bridget.
A Big Bridget. And they do. The rest of them do make it away from the collapse, but yeah, Bruton and the Carnotaur are gone.
Well, I mean.
Yeah, I know, whatever.
Oh, wait, Sonny and Cher? The Carnotaurs.
Oh, no, I'm stopping this in its tracks.
Sonny and Cher.
No! Okay, yes, fine. So Sonny's dead, but Cher. Sonny's dead, but Cher lives to.
Oh no!
Sorry, Sonny Bono. R.I.P.
And guys, this is the thing that kills me, is that Bruton was right. He was like, I'm going to die here. That's the way it is. And he did. He did it, though, by his own choice and not his fate. He chose to go back and save the rest of this mini herd from those Carnotaurs. So it was his choice, not his fate. And I think that's great. So now those of us who are left alive have been trapped in this cave system by the cave-in at the front, right?
Mm-hmm.
And so we're just navigating the rest of this cave system. And this is where I wrote, all of their night vision must be amazing because there is no light down here.
That is not your normal average everyday darkness. This is advanced darkness.
And this is where we come to a dead end.
Okay, let's do it again. I spy with my little eye.
A rock.
You got it again. Oh, you are good.
Well, I'll tell you what I spy.
A dead end.
What do we do now?
I guess we just go back.
Hold on a moment.
Guys, there's no way out of this cave. But Zinni smells fresh air.
Yeah.
And digs a rock out of the wall to expose daylight.
And this is very encouraging. Like, oh, holy shit. This is it. This is the hope we've been clinging on to for survival.
And then Aladar starts trying to shift the whole wall by himself, and it just further collapses.
This is where Aladar himself, the voice of hope, starts to despair.
He's defeated, and he's angry.
Oh, you're gonna cry. And that's fine.
He's angry because he's gonna die here with things the way that they are out there.
Oh, sweetheart.
And he says, we weren't meant to survive.
Yeah.
And to some extent, he may be right, but Baleen is over that.
Oh, she lets him have it.
We're here, aren't we? And how dare you waste that good fortune by simply giving up? Shame on you. Shame on you, shame on you. The worst of it is, you allowed an old fool like me to believe I was needed, that I still had a purpose. And do you know what? You were right. I'm going to go on believing it. I, for one, am not willing to die here.
She begins using her colossal body to begin breaking down the wall. And I'm like, this old bitch is tight. Like,
she literally, guys, puts her two front legs up and kicks a hole in the side of that cave system.
Well, my thing is everybody joins in, including the lemurs. Like, it makes a difference.
All I am saying is that Crone wrote those three slow pokes off as useless and weak because they were slow. But without Baleen, they never would have found water back at that lake. And without Baleen, they never would have gotten out of this cave system.
And Baleen finally breaks through to reveal the actual nesting grounds.
It's right there on the other side.
The nesting grounds. It's untouched.
home.
And it comes with a pool!
Yeah, and that's where I started to get choked up again, because imagine what they went through, watching not only their whole clan be destroyed, but their fucking home. And now they have hope renewed, seeing all of these nesting grounds.
It's the way Baleen puts her whole ass in that lake immediately for me. Yeah, I'm so happy for her.
She's like, move out of my way! And guys, they're looking around.
I don't get it. Where's the herd? And then that's when Ema notices the wall of debris blocking the way they used to enter the valley.
Together. That must have been a landslide in my mind. She's like, oh, that's the way we used to get in here. And like, Aladar is immediately on alert because he knows that the herd is going to be coming that way and they're not going to be getting over that wall.
They'll never make it over that.
Aladar, wait, wait. Krone will eat you alive.
Let him try.
I hope Krone's in a listening mood.
We cut to Krone's shocked face at the blockage into the valley. The herd is literally on the other side of what Ema and Aladar were just looking at together.
And Krone is like, well, now what?
Krone says, we're going to have to climb this to get over the top. And, you know, everybody's like, what?
He's like, yeah, let's bed down and then we'll climb it in the morning. And Nira's like, are you serious?
Are you fucking kidding me? No!
And guys, the lay of the land on the Krone side of this landslide is very important for this last couple of minutes of the film, because they're in a canyon. They have been basically walking through a rock hallway to get to this split in the valley
where a rock hallway.
They've been walking through this rock hallway to get to the split in the valley to enter the nesting grounds, but now that's blocked.
It just dead ends.
It's a dead end. That's what I can't get over, is that they're kind of pinned right there.
Somehow Aladar manages to get back through the cave collapse and not kill himself, but...
Well, that's the thing, is because there's no way all of them were getting back through that collapse, but he's small enough that he can get through the collapse, and not to mention he's also on his own now.
And which... narrowly avoids the big Carnotaur.
Yeah, he can be by himself, he can avoid the remaining Carnotaur, and he's also faster now that he doesn't have to accommodate the slowpokes, and he walks through the night to get through the rock hallway where the rest of the herd is now pinned behind that blockage.
Krone is telling the herd, our survival, our future is over these goddamn rocks. And no one wants to follow him. It's too dangerous. But Krone tells them they will die there if they don't follow him. And Aladar comes a-running and says that there is a safer way and not to do this. He says you will all fall to your deaths the moment you climb over that.
Look, we gotta go now.
Go where? Straight to the Carnotaurs?
If we hurry, we can get around them. You can't get over those rocks. There's a sheer drop on the other side. You're gonna kill the herd! I know a way to the valley, and everybody can make it! Now follow me!
So Krone attacks Aladar.
Krone starts laying him out, and I mean kicking his ass, which why shouldn't he? He's the, quote, greater male in this situation. But then Nira knocks his ass over. Could you imagine if, like, you felt affronted and I took the other guy's side?
Yeah.
Like, that would fucking suck.
It would probably hurt.
And she starts following Aladar back out of the canyon.
Yeah, they lead the whole herd away.
Yeah, everyone
else. The herd's like, I'm going with this guy. I'm sick of your shit, Krone.
And the way Krone is gagged, like, fucking sitting there going, where are y'all going?
Nira!
There's this moment of, like, all right, I think everything's gonna be okay.
Uh-oh.
And then you hear it, the distant roar of the Carnotaur.
I love that shot of the end of the canyon where you see that Carnotaur come around the corner.
I hate watching it. It's in my nightmares.
And
it's like the alien crossing the alien signs. I'm like...
I'm shitting my pants because this is bad. They're in a canyon. They are pinned back there in face of this gigantic carnivore.
He's led that monster right to us. And everybody's like, okay, maybe we should go with Krone. Oh.
Yeah, the entire herd gets skittish. And Crone says, let's go before we're dinner. And Aladar says, no, don't scatter. Because he already knows something about this thing's visual acuity based on their encounter in the cave. He knows that that thing's vision is not perfect. And so this is where he charges forward and starts bellowing at the Carnotaur.
Because the Carnotaur is charging down at them and it's terrifying. And it's like, ooh, a buffet, you know, like...
If we scatter, he'll pick us up! Stand together!
And then all of the other dinosaurs start bellowing at the Carnotaur.
If we stand together, he can't kill us all, like...
Or she.
Yeah, she.
Cher.
Cher.
Cher can't kill us all if we stand together.
And this is where I honestly made the first intellectualization of this. What is happening here is that the Carnotaur with the bad eyesight is thinking that all of these noises it's hearing are one big dinosaur.
Ooh!
That's exactly what's happening. It's
interesting.
It's hearing all that noise and thinking, oh, I'm outweighed here. And what happens is they keep making noise and inch around the Carnotaur.
I wrote, Aladar starts bitching back. Like, it's so frightening. And I'm from the Holocene.
Exactly.
I don't even know about the Cretaceous. Watching them back this thing up, I'm thinking to myself, this film is such a moment.
Yeah.
And such an experience. Mm-hmm. I like vastly underrated. Drink every time I've said that, by the way.
If you let one ant stand up to us,
they will all stand up
to us. And that's it. It's the strength in numbers. That Carnotaur knows it can't stand up to all of those dinosaurs.
Since Crone is the only one left behind trying to take the dumbass way, the Carnotaur comes right for him.
It starts climbing the rock face after him.
And Nira and Aladar are being all noble and shit and trying to save him with his dumbass.
That's her brother. That's Nira's brother.
Whatever.
I would, even if you were doing some dumb shit, I'd still come back for you.
Even if I was trying to kill us all?
Well, I would question your judgment, but also not want you to die.
And like, someone needs to call this union. Because Crone is a manager, I'm telling you, like...
And Crone climbs as far as he can until he realizes he's stuck. He is at, you know, another dead end.
He is cornered by the Carnotaur. There is a chasm and he cannot get over it. And by the way, just want to say, as the Carnotaur is coming for him, Nira is the first one to strike the Carnotaur.
Yeah. Oh, let the women do the work.
And then Aladar joins in and they whooping his ass, or sorry, whooping her ass. They're whooping Cher's ass.
And Cher snaps Crone up in her jaws and throws him. That's basically the end of Crone.
Yeah, Crone is dead, thank God.
The last thing Crone sees is Aladar trying to save his ass.
Mm-hmm.
And I think that's appropriate.
And they push this thing to the edge of the cliff and it goes over, but it almost takes Aladar with her.
Yeah, like the cliff crumbles from underneath Cher and she snaps. She snaps.
This is the best idea you've ever had.
Sunny and Cher.
Sunny and Cher, yeah.
The Carnotaurs.
I don't know about ever had, but that's great.
Like, Cher goes over the cliff and almost takes Aladar with her.
We see her lifeless body at the end, bottom of the chasm after Aladar scrambles back up on the edge. And I wrote, oh no, she passed away? Yeah, Crone is gone. Natural selection, all right?
Yeah. Oh, I'm sorry.
That's awful. I'm kidding.
No, but Ross, his own words. He was, quote, too weak to survive.
I mean, poor Neera, but, like, good for Neera, right? Like,
well,
she's the new Crone.
Well,
I don't think they have, you know, inherent absolute primogeniture in dinosaurs, so...
Yeah, so
I think the crown should just pass to Neera, right? Or do you think they'd give it to Aladar? Do you think they're sexist?
I mean, Aladar... I'm sorry, it's not about sexism.
Yeah, they're not made it up yet, so I don't know.
Aladar was the natural leader in those end stages there.
Sure.
He was! Like, explain how he wasn't!
Guys... The herd finally arrives out of the Doom Cave.
Yeah, Aladar leads them back around the long way through the cave system. And when they all come out into the sunlight, I feel the warmth of the sun on my skin, and I feel their hearts swell.
Welcome home.
Everyone is home and I'm crying and the bellowing. Guys, we see life anew.
The great circle of life starts over again.
Aladar and Neera are having babies of their own.
They have a clutch of eggs of their own.
And they're hatching. Oh, good show, little one.
The way Pleo is actively pulling that egg apart, like, hello, little one.
Aren't you the sweetest little small fry I ever did see?
Hey, little guy. He looks just like me.
Meet your dad. He's not as crazy as he looks.
Oh, happy day.
Well done, little one.
Come here, you little rascal. Let me get a good look at you. Yep.
Yar picks up that new baby, and it pisses all down the front of him. Yep. He's his father's son, all right. And guys, Zinni found a harem of wives?
There's like six female lemurs, because there's lemurs in these nesting grounds, and six of them have just glommed onto him like, oh, holy hell, yes.
Any of you ladies want to play monkey in the middle?
Stop it!
I hate it. Hate it. And guys...
Where's that harem anime? Oh, I'm sorry. You're about to get emotional.
As life erupts all over the place, we see all manner of other little babies being born. The world didn't end, guys.
No.
It all is this heaven? Are they actually all dead?
No, this is not the end of Lost.
You're right.
God damn it.
None of us really know what changes, big or small, lie ahead. One thing is certain, our journey's not over. We can only hope that, in some small way, our time here will be remembered.
Roll those credits! I am so glad we did this!
I wrote at the end of my notes, I'm pretty sure you're sad that's over.
That's when I sent you the picture of this is what you're going to be dealing with for most of the evening.
And it's you just beside yourself sobbing.
Crying. Like, I got to sit on the couch and hold the hand of my inner child,
mm-hmm,
and absolutely revisit this gem of a film. This was my Land Before Time.
Yeah.
And it taught me so much.
Mm-hmm.
And I have loved it since I was 4 years old.
Mm-hmm.
This film makes me so appreciative of where I am in the timeline of life and in history.
Yeah.
To have that level of awareness from such an early age was immeasurably beneficial for my development. This film, it helped me look at the ugly complexities of survival when it comes to humanity and see how compassionate people deal with it. When everyone else trying to survive in this, air quote,
herd mentality
yeah.
is trying to cleave those they believe to be weak when there must be a voice in the middle of it all, holding it together and ensuring that everyone else can survive
mm-hmm.
with the same level of care.
Yeah.
I think you know that is very integral to who I am as a person.
Yeah.
And what I would like to achieve with my life.
And it's what you want for the world. Even if it's not you, it's what you want for the world.
And it's what Aladar wanted for his little world.
Yeah.
And I've, ever since I was 4, baby. Like this, I just, I'm really glad because I haven't seen this movie in a very long time. And while I watched it this time through, so much was lining up for me. And it just, it filled me to the brim and made me overflow.
Was it a balm on your soul? On your scabby, scabby soul?
It was the balmiest balm on my scabby, scabby soul. I needed this right now.
Mm-hmm.
I truly did.
I feel like we're saying that a lot lately.
I did. I needed this. And rawr.
Rawr.
Yeah.
Rawr little onions. I want to go back to the Cretaceous period.
Yeah, I know.
I just want to vibe in a field.
I don't want to work to live. I want to be monkey. Let's regress.
Let's have mating rituals in trees.
In the words of my lovely roommate, Amalia, we could have been naked in the woods eating fruit and vibing, but no. We are paying to be alive.
Oh my God, Carrie, that's Dinosaur Month.
That is Dinosaur Month. Dinosaur Month in the books.
Maybe there will be another one. There probably can't be, but like...
Maybe not a whole month,
yeah,
but
no.
No, we've kind of exhausted most of the dinosaur movies up until this point.
Little Onions on Main Feed, thank you so much. Oh, great month, guys. Great first month coverages, yeah.
I loved this first series of episodes.
We've only got, you know... 9 more to go.
Holy shit.
Which I know y'all hated that hiatus, but we needed it, okay?
We needed it desperately.
Sorry we took Black History Month off, but, you know, and sorry we didn't talk about women in International Women's Month, but we liked it, you know? Like, we talked about Cher.
That's not, no.
And Wilma Flintstone?
No.
Sorry, Betty Rubble?
We're not, no.
And like, what are some other women? What are some other women? And Ducky? And,
oh my God.
And Laura Dern. See, we did talk about women this month.
Stop it. But guys.
Life finds a way, doesn't it, Harry?
Apparently, because we got all of these out on time, so apparently. But guys, next month, we are doing something that Ross has been pushing for a while.
Because it's overdue. Like, it's a year 5 and we're just now doing this. Guys, I know we love our millennium. I know we love our millennium things. We got to talk about the times once again when the millennials were first being born. And that is the 1980s. And we're going to focus on some super 80s core films next month for April, aren't we?
April is Brat Pack Month.
Brat Pack Month. Oh my God. And guys, I hate to do this to you. No coverage next week, but we love you. There will be one. We will be back April the 8th. Which is our parents' 35th wedding anniversary.
Yeah.
Oh, and I love that we're coming back with Brat Pack on that day.
Yeah.
Oh, that'll be great. We're gonna rerun probably a full-ass film for you next week, so enjoy that. But
it is April Fool's Day.
Yeah. But we'll be back with you Monday, April 8th with what, Carrie?
Guys, when we come back, we will be covering the 1983 teen drama.
Gross.
The Outsiders.
The Outsiders. Bring on the boys, baby.
Oh my God.
Not like that. They're kids, but like, not all of them.
Yeah, no. We're going to run into some Grease things where we've got adults playing teenagers.
I'm sorry about the drool that's about to be on this table.
Please.
I'm sorry.
We're going to have to get you a towel. In the meantime, guys, please go follow us on Twitter at KickNStream.
KickNStream.
You can write the show at kickingandstreamingpodcast@gmail.com.
That's with an and, not an ampersand.
And don't forget, folks, please be practicing those three R's. Rate, review, retweet.
Rate, review, retweet. Folks, we want everyone to come out and join our little watch party, our little bratty watch party.
Oh, stop.
Mm-hmm. More quality content coming to you from Kicking and Streaming.
Until then, I'm Carrie.
Roar!
And as always,
sorry, Mom.